These sessions will be practice and reflection. It's an action reflection model, and we're going to start with action. And the first practice is just a moment of silence. So let's center ourselves in the space as we listen for the sound of the jungle.
So the purpose of our session this week is to slow down, to engage some practices that help you hear the sound of the genuine in yourself. And so our purpose is to lead you through some practices that people that we've worked with have found beneficial in this process.
The practices are simple but powerful. We live in a culture that doesn't have a lot of time to listen. So a lot of what we'll be doing is listening. We live in a culture of fear, in a political climate that's hard to even follow sometimes. And sometimes it's scary to listen to the sound of the genuine in ourselves.
I think it's also scary to hear the sound of the genuine in other people, because when we hear that, then we recognize them as human, and there's a sort of a justice action that then follows in terms of how we humanize them. Hopefully everyone grabbed a packet when they came in. If you didn't, there's some on the table. And this is a packet that we will use throughout our sessions. So if you don't come back, it's okay. You can just take it with you. And if someone comes who wasn't here today, they'll just pick up another one. But on the inside of the first page are some excerpts from this speech, or this baccalaureate address, I guess, baccalaureate sermon that Reverend Dr. Howard Thurman gave at Spelman College. And so this has kind of been the foundational thinking for these sessions. And we'd like to read these aloud. We wanted you to hear his voice first, very slow and passionate. But the text is here. So are there some people that would be willing to read? I need six voices to read. Reader one, reader two in the back, reader three, reader four, reader five, Anne. Who'd like to be six? And then six. Thank you. So let's, if you'd flip to the page one on the inside, let's read this aloud.
There is in every person something that waits and listens for the sound of the genuine in herself or himself. There is in you something that waits and listens for the sound of the genuine in yourself. Nobody like you has ever been born, and no one like you will ever be born again. You are the only one. If you cannot hear the sound of the genuine within you, you will never find whatever it is for which you are searching. And if you hear it and then do not follow it, it was better that you had never been born.
You are the only one that has ever lived. Your idiom is the only idiom of its kind in all existences. And if you cannot hear the sound of the genuine in you, you will all of your life spend your days on the ends of strings that somebody else pulls.
So the burden of what I have to say to you is, what is your name? Who are you? And can you find a way to hear the sound of the genuine in yourself?
There are so many voices and noises going on inside of you. So many echoes of all sorts. So many internalizing of the rumble and the traffic going on in your minds. The confusions, the disorders by which your environment is peopled, that I wonder if you can get still enough, not quiet enough, but still enough, to hear rumbling up from your unique and essential idiom, the sound of the genuine in you. I don't know if you can, but this is your assignment.
The sound of the genuine is flowing through you. Don't be deceived and thrown off by all the noises that are a part, even of your dreams and your ambitions, that you don't hear the sound of the genuine in you. Because this is the only true guide you will ever have. And if you don't have that, you don't have a thing. Cultivate the discipline of listening to the sound of the genuine in yourself.
So take a few minutes now to not get quiet enough, but still enough, to listen for the sound of the genuine. So if you have a journal, you can journal in something that you brought. Otherwise, we gave you some space in the packet. There's pens over here. About 5-6 minutes, just to get us kind of get the pump primed for our listening. Here's some questions to prompt you. introverts, that wasn't enough time. For the extroverts, that was way too much time. We've noticed in the practices that caring for the different ways that people engage is important. So there'll be prep time for the introverts and sharing time for the extroverts. And so lean in to whichever maybe isn't your strength as we practice these practices. What is your genuine sound like? Does anybody want to share? We're going to kind of bring this into the space a little bit. What'd you come up with for that? Anybody have something to share?
I wrote down unsure and looking, because I'm not quite sure what part of me is genuine in the things I do and think.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, yeah.
I wrote down that I'm only genuine when I'm alone by myself.
Huh. Genuine when you're alone and by yourself.
Thanks.
I went a different direction. I just said happy heartbeat, breathing, smiling, whispers of love for God and nature.
Thank you.
That's lovely.
I found myself going around in circles a little bit until I replaced genuine with God.
Ah, okay. So what does God sound like? Mm-hmm. Great.
Listening for, yeah. Mm-hmm. And those are my strings. The pullers are my strings.
Anybody else? How about that second? You can come back to if you decide you want to share something about it. How about that second question? I love this image. All of your days, you will find yourself on the ends of strings that somebody else pulls, like, right? It's like the marionette image, that if you don't know who you are and who God has called and created you to be, somebody else is going to run that. So did you identify any strings? God strings that you have? Those are good ones. Yeah, back there.
I said my parents, so I'm 61 years old. My parents are dead. But I still hear messages that they gave me about what I should or shouldn't do, or how I should dress, or the Christian I should be, or the job I should have. You know, I can't get those out of my head. So I said that. And then I said cultural messages. Again, how you should dress or look, your body shape, what you should be as a woman. And I think that really causes a lot of issues with teens trying to find their own identity, where everyone's supposed to look like this. God made us all different, so we don't only a very small fit in. And then my third one was the roles that I'm in. So I'm a nurse and I'm a mother, and so I like those roles that I'm in, but they do have some constraints, and so I don't want to lose myself into the identity of the role. There's more to me than just the role.
Some of the strings have positive and negative elements to them, right? And it's coming to awareness of which are those. And we'll do a little more later in the week about those cultural pressures and those other. We're going to investigate some of those things. We're going to start with story sharing practice today. But how do we unpack? And when we did this work with freshmen, that family story was, we didn't put that, we couldn't put everything in, but we have an exercise around how do you claim whether your story is your story. So that's good. You're also sitting next to my mother, so she may be pulling my string. Other folks? Yeah, in the back.
Everybody. I think my thing is that I take care of people. And anybody that I see that they need something, I feel like I have to help them, you know? So all my friends, everyone, you know, a lot of my time gets pulled in dropping everything to go do something to someone who needs a ride here or this there. So I feel like sometimes everybody can do
it. That sounds like that's not always life-giving for you.
Yeah. Not always.
Yeah.
Somebody over here had, I didn't catch it. Yeah, Bruce.
I went a little bit different direction. The strings for me are the things that kind of set me off, I guess, as political jargon, political conversation, injustices in the political arena, those kinds of things really tend to be strings for me. And the same thing economic. We live in such a culture that economic is, it seems like it's kind of always on the pulling my strings. And then the last is parenting. I hear lots of parental tapes that are guidelines of what my parents think my genuine should be, not necessarily what my
Maybe we should have
I think
that.
You did something right because I don't hear those tapes. That's my dad. I don't hear those tapes, so good job. Good job, Dad.
I've been here
curious. Nice work.
Not so much. No, not too much. Dip.
Mine, I think, is my desperate need to be liked and approved.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that can be a big pull. A big pull for lots of people.
I got to plug in a string here. My power's going to go.
Let's go on to the last question. What practices in your own life currently help you stay rooted to your genuine self? And by practices, that's a loose term, right? What things do you do regularly? What not? Maybe you practice yoga or something that you'd use the word practice for, but how do you spend your time and what things do you do that keep you rooted? Anne?
Well, one thing that really struck me is that, you know, a lot of us have been using meditation to quiet ourselves. And this is not about being quiet, this is about listening. So it made me really stop and think, because, you know, if you practice meditation, you're letting all those thoughts go.
Yeah.
And this is really about how we hear our internal voice. Hadn't thought about it that way before, so I have to think about that.
Oh, I like that.
Prayer has been a practice, sometimes good, sometimes not.
Yeah.
But, yeah, maybe it might not get it.
Yeah.
Gardening.
Can you say more about?
It only works in the summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just when I am totally just thinking about, you know, it's a mindless task pretty much.
Yeah. Lovely. Other practices?
I drive 30 minutes to work, and luckily it's a beautiful commute. It's not behind cars and things like that. And so I don't turn anything on, and I just, instead of asking God with my grocery list of, you know, people I love that I want to have God's attention, I just, and this has really shifted for me, just thank God for already loving them and just naming them, including the people that I'm going to go work for as residents. And there's something that happens in me with that, that gratitude and just trusting that God's already loving them and just sort of
That's lovely. That's lovely.
I wrote down ritual in my daily life. I always check the doorknob before I go to bed, sleep well, and also in worship life. I grew up very liturgical, and I liked liturgical services. The contemporary leave me feeling like it's not yet all done.
Thank you.
There's a lot about stories, so we're going to start with our stories now that we've practiced a little bit of the practices. As I was already introduced as a semi-employed pastor, I serve a part-time call north of Seattle in a place called Stanwood at a little Lutheran church and do some consulting work and some coaching and some teaching things around the country, including some of this vocational discernment work. And so this has been part of my journey as a pastor, as a Christian, as an educator, and a coach. And my first call was in Spokane, Washington. It was a transformational ministry call, which meant the church was really struggling, and I was supposed to come and fix it, I guess. But one of the things I noticed was that the folks there that didn't have a lot of practices that sustained them. And one of the reasons they were struggling to be the church in that place is that coming Sunday morning was about all many of them had. Some had prayer lives, but they were hungry and thirsty, you know? And so when it came time to do the hard work of being the church in difficult times, they just didn't have a lot of resources. And so that was one of the things that got me interested in, what is this? What is it that feeds us? What is it that gives us strength? I knew what I had that gave me strength, but how does that, how do you teach that? And how do we engage that, not just individually, but communally, so that we can do that work, as a bishop was saying this morning, as that communal work that we have to do together. And I came across, in my congregational call, I came across an organization called the Forum for Theological Exploration out of Atlanta. They're a Lilly grant, largely funded by a Lilly grant. And they were doing a project called creating called Notice, Name, and Nurture. And they were investigating how to engage vocational discernment in congregations. And it was sort of just exactly what I was hoping to teach my folks. So I got involved and was part of helping them shape some of that work. And a lot of the stuff that we've done, we've stolen. At least the very like core of the idea goes all the way back to some of that work. So nothing here, we don't make any of this up. We've just put pieces together. And really what they were after was thinking about the noticing, naming, and nurturing of Christian vocation in congregations, and how do you create the kind of ecosystem where that happens, and recognizing that that's a very deep Christian practice. This listening and telling of stories is really core to who we are as Christian people, and goes way back, and it's really a thread that's run through all of Christian tradition, and we've really lost that in our culture. I thought Bishop Beaton this morning did an incredible job. She told the whole New Testament in about 30 minutes, and I was just wrapped. I know that story, but I was rapt at attention just at how this story flowed out from one of our wise elders of the church and drew us in, at least me, to what it was that we were about to do. So I came to Trinity Lutheran College, which is what became of the Lutheran Bible Institute in Seattle, and served there as a campus pastor, and was called as Director of Vocational and Spiritual Formation, and given a curriculum that worked really well with Lutheran Luther League students and did not work at all for this crazy, diverse, amazing group of students that we had at Trinity Lutheran College. The first session was, the whole session was, how do you pray? And I knew that if I launched that in front of kids from Tacoma and kids from all different races and ethnic backgrounds and economic backgrounds, and most of them not Christians, it would have been a crickets in the room kind of a day. Kind of had to scramble to figure out how are we going to engage in spiritual practices, and mining the traditions, mining the Lutheran tradition or the Christian tradition for all. There's lots of good stuff in there if you start digging. And so we've practiced this over 5 years. We did a course with all the freshmen. Every Friday we'd gather in small groups with a faculty mentor. Anne Marie was one of the guinea pigs from the get-go, and we walked with these students for the whole year, and then we both had to talk to some of them last week that we had it 5 years ago. Trinity Lutheran College closed 2 years ago, unfortunately, but so we practiced these practices together and found some amazing richness and depth and community transformation that came out of especially the listening practices, but also just experiencing these other spiritual practices. And when I told them, and I'll tell you too, you don't have to like any of this, but the only way to learn a spiritual practice is to practice a spiritual practice. And you don't know whether you like it or not until you have tried it. And you may think you're not going to like it, but just give it a shot, because who knows? It might be just the thing. We were always surprised at what would click for these students, and they were often surprised. as what would click. So as I said, Trinity closed 2 years ago, and now this work has gone viral. So it spread. There's a seminary in New York City that's doing some of these with one of our colleagues. At Valparaiso, we did some design elements, and we've got a colleague at Valparaiso, Indiana, doing some of this work. I'm doing this work in congregations now, which has been interesting, moving beyond young adults. Our colleague Dave Ellingson is really interested in what he calls third chapter, and that vocational discernment that happens after you retire and before you're ready to be old, and what are you going to do with your life, and what are you called to. Our colleague Liz, who is one of the facilitators, is now the directing directs a formation for the deaconess community. It's even in China. Mark and Kathy Williams are running a coffee shop in, I don't even know the town, in China, where they're doing story sharing with Chinese people, learning English and hearing their stories. And then Anne-Marie is doing some of this work now in high school, and she's going to tell some of her story.
Yeah, so I came to this these ideas sort of from a different lens, having been a public high school English teacher for 7 years. And I'm also a singer-songwriter. And so writing stories and listening to stories and writing about them has always been part of what I have loved doing. Several of my early songs came from stories that I read, something that happened in my community and I wrote about it, or a piece of historical fiction that I read. So for me, you know, stories carry this incredible power to transform us and to connect us. And so I really got to engage in these practices when I was at Trinity. And then the college closed. And so I lost my job as this English professor. And I thought, what am I going to do? And I went back to, I went to my vocational mentor and said, I need some vocation mentoring. And my gut is telling me I should go teach high school again. And my friend and colleague said, yeah, I think you're pretty clear on that. I think you should. So I jumped back into the world of public teaching. So I teach at a high school north of Seattle in a community called Lake Stevens. It's a one high school town. And I have the privilege of teaching some creative writing classes there to seniors. And I have always felt like there's power in students getting voice to tell their own stories and to be heard with those stories. But I think even more so now than ever, having had about a 10-year exit from public school teaching and jumping back in, it was really eye-opening to me in terms of how just the different place that my students are at with the technology that they have, the kind of prevalence of mental illness and mental unwell kind of challenges. And there's a lot of that that gets brought to the classroom. So for me, being able to help students write and tell their stories is really important. I also have always felt like we don't know very well how to listen in our culture. And I don't think that my high schoolers get listened to very much. They talk a lot. People talk at them. But to truly hear them and their story and who they are is really powerful. So teaching them even how to do that with each other has been a really life-giving thing. I've also had the privilege of attending the women's retreat at Holden several years now in a row. And I really love the quiet sort of space of that time. And I want to wrap up my introduction by sharing a song that I wrote at a woman's retreat maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I was in a poetry session with the Poet Laureate of Washington, and she introduced me to a poem by Jane Hirschfeld called Only When I Am Quiet and Do Not Speak. And I thought about kind of what that means for us as people learning to listen. And so that line took on life in a song that I wrote to just kind of wrap up this time before we start practicing listening. So this is When I Am Quiet and Do Not Speak. Do not speak. Then I finally learn to listen to the joy and sorrow, the loss and grief that is sung throughout creation. And in the silence, I can also hear something calling, oh, something near, the still small voice that is me. speak. Then wisdom finally comes to me, and the questions seem to matter more than the answers I'd been looking for. And the words of wisdom that get lost in all the noise, finally I can hear them, much to my surprise, if I close my mouth and open up my eyes. So come, Spirit, come, and make of me a heart full of hope, holding tight to the mystery of all that was and is and what will be, oh, and what will be. When I am quiet and do not speak, I see all that I've been missing, every leaf that fluttered to the ground, and the sound of my heart beating, and hope renewing through the path the river flows, with wisdom speaking from my head down to my toes, making something new deep in my soul. So come, Spirit, and make of me a heart full of hope, holding tight to the mystery of all that was and is and what will be, oh, and what will be. When I am quiet and do not speak, oh,
so listening is something you can do by yourself, but holy listening is not. This is a communal practice, and this lies at the heart of what it is that forms this work, this story-sharing work, and correlates with the other half, which is testimony. And so we're going to be spending the next, probably hour or so, practicing in several rounds some of these practices. And the materials we've given you, we did this when we were teaching college too, but the idea is hopefully you can steal this and use this back home if you find it valuable. So we're going to teach it in some ways for you to be the facilitators back home and steal away all this material. Since we stole it, we just encourage other people to steal it and adapt it. But it's all online, or this stuff will be. The website's on the back. But you can take this and adapt it and use it back home, and we encourage you to do so. So keep that in mind as we're practicing is... how can you be practitioners who then teach other people to practice? And so this is a communal story sharing practice. And so flip to, I gotta get mine.
Can I, while you're looking, yeah, I wanna say something. When I first learned about this practice, I was really down with the concept of holy listening, but the word testimony scared the hell out of me because I associated it with this sort of evangelical, right? Like giving your testimony. So I just wanna kind of let you into a little secret that it's not that, but I like the concept that we're telling something that's truthful to someone else. So also, John and Aaron, there are packets down here if you guys need them, just because we're going to read from that. So if you want them.
Sure.
Oh, he's coming down. Linda, you've got it.
Oh. Meet in the middle.
Yeah, meet in the middle. Thank you.
So if you flip to page 3 in your packet, and what we're going to do is just read through these paragraphs that really summarize this practice, and then we'll try it, and then we'll debrief it. So this is action, reflection, action, reflection, action, reflection, till we're tired of it, and then some more. So would somebody start at holy listening there and read till you're... tired of reading or until the end of the paragraph? Somebody just start reading.
Holy listening. Oh, go ahead.
Thank you. Two people. Go ahead.
Holy listening is very different from everyday listening.
when often we listen to what is being said only enough to form a response. Holy listening invites us to slow down, take a look around, and create space between us to speak the truths of our lives out loud to one another. We focus on the speaker as the listener practices a disciplined posture of care, hospitality, relaxed awareness, and attentiveness. We are invited to listen to another person in the way we listen to Scripture. Douglas Steer writes of the sacred nature of this practice to listen. Another soul into a condition of disclosure and discovery may be almost the greatest service that any human being ever performs for another.
We're invited to listen to another story the way we listen to Scripture, which hopefully is attentive to the holy within that story and that person, ready to be surprised at how we might hear something holy that we didn't expect, or might be challenged or might be comforted. To listen another's soul into a condition of disclosure and discovery may be almost the greatest service that any human being ever performs for another. This is a holy gift that we as listeners give to those we listen to. Somebody read that next paragraph, please.
God is revealed to us in the stories of Scripture and in the stories of God's community. When we gain the ability to listen to one another deeply, we may begin to notice the presence of God in other people's stories, and more in our story as well. Creating a space for those stories to live and move is a part of creating a community where we all have room to discover our gifts and become who God is creating us to be.
So we've heard of active listening. People know about active listening. Kind of like that, but even sort of another layer deeper. So take a minute with your pens and or in your journals here, this is for the introverts especially, and reflect on when have you experienced this kind of listening? So write for just a minute, and then we'll share that. When have you experienced this kind of holy listening? Finish the sentence you're writing, and then let's, am I on? Oh, there we are. Finish the sentence you're writing, and then let's come together. Does anybody have a story that they'd like to share briefly about when they've heard this kind of listening, when you've experienced this kind of listening?
Well, I have been a Stephen minister for 35 years, and this is the basis for all of it.
That act of healing in Stephen's ministry starts with the listening piece, right?
Listening to the other person and causing them to, or getting them to understand that I have heard them. And to do that, I would repeat their story.
Wonderful, thanks. How about other folks? When have you experienced this kind of holy listening?
The first time I really realized that somebody was listening to me was when I got married and my mother-in-law would ask a question and actually sit there and listen.
How did that make you feel?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, she was a great woman and she taught me a lot.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have that in my home.
Yeah. Thank you.
A couple more? Yeah, in the back.
all of my examples seem to have to do with when I'm out in nature, like an outward bound trip or college, or I've hiked the Camino 3 times. The Camino is a wonderful place to hear stories and share stories. So somehow getting into a sacred space that's devoid of all the distractions.
Yeah, sometimes it takes clearing out the clutter in order to have that space to listen, which is really hard to do. One more?
Yeah, Bruce.
I wrote down long talks on hiking. So you get on a trail, and you're down 5 miles, and you get into a dual conversation with someone else, and some really amazing stories told me.
Good.
I also have that one other thing. It's like my husband always says, everybody has a story to tell.
Yeah.
And so he asks a question and then sits and listens to their story. And so, we always come away with a whole new understanding.
Thanks. So this practice has two roles in it, right? So one of them is the holy listening, the holy listener. And the other one is the testimony. So would somebody be willing to read, somebody start reading the second part of this practice, testimony?
Testimony is the practice of sharing with honesty the stories that give meaning to our lives. In some churches, it means standing up to tell your conversion experience or personal salvation story. Testimony can include these stories, but can also be seen more broadly. Dory Baker and Joyce Ann Mercer encourage us in this practice not only to focus on God's already finished action in the world, but also to testify to those moments that have been tucked into the seams of everyday living. Because in the presence of an artful listener, we may better be able to discern a pattern of calling, playing, and ongoing revelation woven through these life events. Testimony is simply telling the truth of our lives out loud to one another. As we share stories about our lives, we testify to our truths.
So I love the second to last line there. Testimony is simply telling the truth of our lives out loud to one another. So I think sometimes when we're called upon to share, when we practice that, we want to think of the most important moment or something that was kind of shiny and bright or wonderful where we won or we did this or that or was really hard. And some of the truth of testimony is just that there's so much truth and goodness in us that's revealed in the just daily moments of living. So what I love about this practice is partly that element of it. So now take just a moment to respond. You can kind of write this down. What images or connotations does the word testimony evoke in you? What memories of testimony do you have from your upbringing? Or maybe you have something more current that you haven't experienced with this. So just take like a minute to jot a few ideas down and then we'll talk. So is anyone willing to share what images or connotations the word testimony evokes or experiences that you have with this or either growing up or fear?
Fear.
Unpack that a little. What do you mean? Why? Share with the whole congregation your conversion story. Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
I feel it feels like contriving and not honest or transparent when I see the images of, and like these hero stories where we did it, we won. And I just feel like it's just not authentic to what the real journey is.
Sure. Yeah, good.
I was thinking about people that have told their stories and with their flaws and their mistakes, and to me, that's what, but they're okay with it, and they still cherish themselves, and it's like, you know what, that's the journey, and it's okay that I make mistakes. It's not, you know, they don't beat themselves up to it, up for it, and so I, that's a testimony to me. It's like, I could do that too. I can accept my mistakes and go,
yeah.
So that's what I thought of.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, are you ready to practice this? So you're not standing up in front of everyone. You're talking with one other person, so I don't think it's as scary. If you flip over to page 4, you'll see the practice. And so okay. Am I taking your stuff? So the way that this works is that you would find a partner and decide
somebody you don't know very well.
Yeah, like not your spouse or your partner or your good friend that you're here with. And decide who's going to share first and who's going to share second. And so you're going to get 2 minutes to think quietly to kind of decide what you're going to say. And then you'll each have 2 minutes to share your story. And so when we did this with college students, I always said, because we did this in small group, and I always said, so someone else is going to talk for 2 minutes, and you are going to listen for 2 minutes, and you're not going to say back to them what you heard. You're just going to show them with your body that you're hearing them. So 2 minutes to think, 2 minutes for one person to share, and then 2 minutes for the other person to share. So it says here, listeners, make eye contact, give your full attention, pretend that you have all the time in the world. Storytellers, speak from your heart. Don't worry about having a beginning, middle, and an end. Add details to draw us into the story. Try to be specific and descriptive. Those are your kind of your tasks.
And one of the keys is don't talk about the story.
Yeah.
Invite us into that story. Yeah. So what it smelled like and what it felt like, and kind of try to get into your guts and your body as you're telling it. But it doesn't have to be well crafted. We're looking for sort of a moment in time and to just sort of draw us in. And it doesn't have to be an amazing one. It can just be one of these tucked into the couch cushions of your life. You know, just like pull something out and see what you got.
And finally, if you've ever done yoga or meditated, what's it like the first time you do it? It's awkward and harder. It's different than you've done before. So this is also a practice. So if you're like, oh, what are they asking us to do? I'm a little, you know, expect to practice it. Expect that you maybe as you did it more, you would get better. So the question is, or the prompt, right? I'm a writing teacher. The prompt is, tell a story about a time when someone took you or your gifts seriously. Tell a story about a time when someone took you or your gifts seriously, okay? So find a partner. It's okay to move around in the space, maybe sit next to them so you can talk, maybe turn your chair so you can talk comfortably. So we'll give you a second to do that. And then we're gonna give you time to think.
And introduce yourself to your partner, give names and sort of that thing. I think the practice because you're going to deep.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry. It's a production.
All right, does everybody have a partner? What? Oh, somebody has to rotate. We got two spouses.
Is there
spouses.
A partner group that could break up so that the spouses aren't...
But you're going to two other corners. The good news is we're going to do this a bunch of times, so this is not your dance partner for the whole evening. We should have had dance cards where you could decide. Okay, does everybody have a partner? Okay, so if you decide who's going to talk first and who's going to talk second, just so you've got that figured out. And then we're going to have 2 minutes of silence while you think about this story. This is for the introverts. You're welcome. Everybody got who's first and who's second? Okay, so 2 minutes of silence for everybody to think about the story that they want to tell and kind of dig into it. 2 minutes, ready, go. Remember, no talking when you're listening. You can make sort of grunts and facial expressions. And this sort of thing, but it's not a time to mirror back or to ask. We'll get to questions later. There's phases to this. This is just the listening, and it's kind of awkward, especially for the extroverts, but try it. Practice it. So 2 minutes of listening. Remember, make eye contact, give your full attention, pretend you have all the time in the world in 2 minutes. For the storyteller, speak from your heart. Don't worry about having a beginning, middle, or an end, and add details to draw us into the story. So person one, you've got 2 minutes to tell your story about a time when someone took you or your gifts seriously. Ready, go. Person one, finish up the sentence that you're saying. You'll get another chance later.
All right. When we taught this at Trinity, Eric always had that those Tibetan, like the bowl that you run the, so he would do this beautiful chime. So we were saying, we're going to continue to do this tomorrow on Thursday a bit in our sessions. And I said, oh, we need to see if someone has one of those.
Eric forgot it on top of his piano where it lives.
So. Yes, it's okay. So in your packet, there's some discussion and journal questions that we'll probably have you, that we'll kind of just reflect on. And we're not going to have a lot of time in this session to actually like write answers to them. But it's something that we'd encourage you to think about if you have some quiet time sitting around the village. But I guess my question for you mostly is just, how did that feel? First of all, how did it feel to be the holy listener? To be the person doing that kind of sacred or holy listening.
And I can verify that, because somehow over the years I've gotten the reputation of a marriage counselor. So one of my, I don't know how it happened, it just happened, but one of the exercises is something similar, 12 to 14, 15 questions, finish the sentence, but the other person, the listener, has to listen. No response, no questions, no nothing. And that's exactly what happens. It opens up the heart of the other individual.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes it's very hard to sit through, but if that right there, that exercise goes like, is if it's going to open at all, the heart's going to open right then.
Yeah.
Back and forth between the two. And then, of course, the other one gets to do the sentence.
Right.
And the other person has to listen. Yeah. And we do like two whole sessions of that before we start dialogue.
Yeah.
And I'm the commandant, because I'm not going to let people argue in my office.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that exact listening without response does open the heart. That's a perfect way to say it.
I think it's hard for some people, but for some people it's really freeing, because I'm often, if I feel like I'm, so if I have former students that come to me for advice and they're telling me these things, I get sort of nervous as I'm listening to them, like, what am I going to say back? What kind of wise thing am I going to impart on them? And it's sort of freeing to just realize that you're not expected to say anything back, but that your job is just to hear them, which is kind of neat too. What about the other role? How did it feel to be the in the role of telling your story?
I think you get excited about that you want to get all of the information, you know, to share the excitement of what happened.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
I think there's a fear of sounding conceited.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But it is powerful to feel like you're being heard.
I'd forgotten about the story that I shared. And to feel that love, and
That's an element of that, listening another's soul into a state of discovery and disclosure.
Yeah.
The listening of the, like, oh, I didn't even know this story was there. I discovered deep in the wells that story. That's cool.
All right. Are you ready to try it again? We're going to do this again with a new partner. And you're going to share the same story that you shared, but with someone else. You don't have to think of another story. You can share the same one.
One thing, though. You may share the same story, or you may want to share a different story to the same question. So that's an option as well. You may want to tell the same story again, or you may have another story that has come up in the meantime that appears. So we're going to do the 2 minutes of silence again. So find another partner, and then we'll do 2 minutes of silence, and you can discern whether the original story is the story or whether there's another one.
Are you guys coming down up top? Okay, so there's some people up top that are going to come down and intermingle, so maybe we could wait to partner with them before we...
One of us has to leave.
Okay.
Come around. Was it easier for folks or harder? It was easier. I need my bell.
I know.
We should find one. Hello. Apparently the people like talking to each other, Anne-Marie, sharing their stories. That's good. Was it different the second time? Did it feel a little more comfortable, or is it still awkward for some folks? What's your experience of it?
Easier the second time.
Okay.
Can you, do you know, can you say why? Have any idea why?
I switched stories. I didn't
know. Oh, okay.
I was tired of hearing the first one. I didn't want to hear it. It was just easier.
One of the reasons to change the story is we're working on the testimony. So what is the story that, that carries the most truth? And it might not be the one that first comes to mind, but sometimes it will remind you of the story that really is closer. And you maybe don't know that till you tell that story. Until you're like, oh, that wasn't the story. It's actually this story. We use this question. So for years, I would use the same story. And then one time, it was like, that's not the story. It was this different one. Came out of left field. And that became like a much better story for me. So, yeah. I'm interested in how do you think our communities would be different if we listened like this? Like, what impact would this have on our lives and in our communities?
Yeah. A lot closer knit. You know, people would just understand each other.
Dead.
I think that it's imperative that we listen. And I mean, I had many experiences in my career listening to people that were marginalized in the area where I worked. And out of listening to them, truly listening and hearing them, there were some pretty exciting kinds of programs or events is the word I'm looking for, that were launched. And I often have, when I have a real draw towards issues of homelessness, and I have sat in different meetings thinking, why don't you ask these people what they want and listen to them? Mm. These people are not a problem to be fixed. They're individuals to be listened to and helped. They're not a problem. They're people. Mm. And so I think if we can listen, we can move mountains. I'm sorry.
Why are you sorry? That was beautiful. No, you didn't. That's lovely.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Deb. That's wonderful.
Well, this whole discussion of civility, this is that. It's needed, very needed in our society at this point in time.
It makes me think of the movie Avatar, where they're greeting as I see you.
Yeah.
And when I was working as a career educator, I go, gee, I wonder if I could say that to him. This is one boy. And so every time we saw each other in the hall, I get down and I go, and he goes, I know. You see me. I go, yes, I see you. But I was just thinking, what an important thing, because that's what it feels like. You're seeing.
Yeah.
In the ancient version of this from that I stole, one of the rituals was exactly that, and it was, I see you, and then the response is, it's good to be seen, which I really like. That's kind of a neat, I see you, it's good to be seen, and to see everyone into the space. So that's another kind of ritual of starting that we have used. So we did that one year, I think.
Uh-huh, with this. We did.
Bruce had something?
I think we live in such a soundbite world to me, and it seems like it's getting worse, and that there's less and less talking together.
Yeah.
And we're not learning more how to talk and how to listen. And so, and it's like it's both sides of those are important, that in order to listen, you have to have someone who's skilled or able to kind of talk and express and to be able to get to know them. So I love Holden because at the table, at all the meals, I meet someone else and I hear a different story.
Yeah.
I don't use the word holy listening, but I love hearing people's stories.
Yeah.
Some of the research that's out there now is we're living in more fractured times than we have for generations, and that we're only listening to people who we already agree with. And so the news you watch and the news somebody else watches is different, and you never change channels. And then we live in these counties that are red or blue, count, you know, county by county. And so we never hear political opinions that are different. We're not listening to the marginalized the way that we could. And so part of this is subversive, to break down some of those barriers and to create that kind of space, which I think is partly why we don't do it. Because it's scary and, it, yeah. and it's dangerous.
Yeah,
it takes a lot of time.
Yeah, yep. and it does.
It takes time.
Yeah.
Last week, if I may.
Yeah, of course.
Last week, one of the faculty was Katie Shire, who is at the border working with folks who are crossing the border and either in detention or in other difficult situations. And she gave us this great article called Voiceless, No... Earless, yes.
Huh.
And those of us who do work sometimes say, well, I want to be the voice of the voiceless. But as soon as we say that, we're sort of saying that someone can't tell their own story or they don't have a story to tell. And it puts us in a false position in the world. And so the people who are telling the story were like, no. I have a voice.
Yeah.
It's just that no one's listening to me. I need an ear. I don't need your voice. I need your ear.
Yeah.
And it's really just cool. A powerful way to rethink the way we work with the marginalized.
Somebody said those who have ears listen, I think, right? We're going to shift to the next, to another level of this. So this is... this is where you get to talk a little bit. You don't have to be quite as silent as listeners. But it's self-awakening questions.
Mm-hmm. All right, so if you would flip to page 5. And somebody be willing to read the first paragraph, and then someone jump in and read the second one there.
Jesus asked his friends and followers an important question. What do you want me to do for you? Sometimes he would do what they asked. But the questions always invited them to interrogate their lives and their deepest desires. Good questions asked by a caring listener can wake us up to our own lives, the life around us, and to the life of God.
Thanks.
Self-awakening questions are not always the questions we are in the habit of asking, but they become more habitual with practice. They help us recognize gifts, listen more attentively for God's presence, and hear God's call. They are questions that emerge when our heads and hearts are open to the holy. We invite the storyteller to explore metaphors or images that help the...
That's weird.
that help satisfy our curiosity. These questions help the speaker walk around in his story long enough to remember risks, challenges, choices, and outcomes, and notice the presence of God.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that should say these. We were kind of going back and forth with pronouns, so we invite the storyteller to explore metaphors or images that help her explore who she is, what she loves, and what she can be passionate about, or they or he, whatever pronoun you want to use in there. Maybe we won't take time to write this journal. You've done a lot of good journaling, but who in your life has asked you questions that led you to go deeper into your story, your passions, or your values? And what kinds of questions did they ask? Can you think of people in your family or friend group or in your community that played this role of asking you questions that helped you to think more deeply? Anybody? Say it again.
Actually, this is my husband, and he says, he doesn't tell me what to do or how to be or how to run my life or the decisions I make. But he says, I want you to be the best Betty that you want to be. You know, he doesn't tell me what best is. He lets me define it. But he gives me space and he wants to elevate and empower, but he doesn't tell me how. And I've never found anyone that does anything close to that.
Thanks,
Betty. Yeah. I'm sorry. Nine months out of the year, I lead Bible study fellowships. So that's about 15 to 18 women that come together from all denominations.
Mm-hmm. So when you sit there with all these different denominations, the questions arise, how do you know that? Where did you get that? So as a leader, it kind of draws me farther into the word to come up with an answer. So it's just been an amazing journey for me to sit with these women and hear their, you know, church stories and this and that.
Thanks. Yeah.
A professor at seminary, Terrence Fretman, and he would always, if you asked a question, he would push it to the logical conclusion of what you're asking. And that was really helpful to find the value that you were asking. He said, am I hearing what you're saying? Is that this is where you're going with your theological statement. Huh. He wouldn't judge you. He would do this to all students. Huh. And he helped me clarify my values in the thought process of the theological question.
That's cool. Thank you. Anybody else? All right, so the second part helps us to think about how we would frame these questions, because the next step of this is then in your holy listening and testimony, as you listen, then you work to frame a question back to the person who's telling the story. Is someone willing to read this paragraph? We'll hope it's a little more grammatically correct than the last one. Sorry about that.
The best questions are simple, brief, and to the point. They're not questions to which you could anticipate the answers, or with right or wrong answers. Invite the storyteller deeper into self-reflection on his or her faith, gifts, and sense of call or meaning. Ask how, what, or why questions. Invite images or metaphors, because they can open up in ways that a more direct questions don't. Ask questions to clarify feelings, images, passions, concerns, hopes, values, as well as patterns and themes in his own story. Ask questions aimed at helping the storyteller to walk around in his or her story in order to remember the risks or challenges, the choices, the outcomes, rather than satisfying your own curiosity. Watch the pacing of the questions and allow some silence. Trust your intuition in asking questions, and as we listen deeply to the storyteller, allow your questions to emerge from a place where your head and your heart are open to the presence of the Holy.
I guess the one thing I would add is, you know, my husband challenges me all the time with asking me these questions, but he doesn't expect an answer. He, you know, if I have one, or I can think of those, but they're thought provoking for me. So I will mull them over, even though I may not ever answer.
Yeah.
We teach clearness practice, which we almost taught up here, but I didn't have time. And one of the elements of that is sometimes the best questions are the ones that you can't answer, but they lead you into the place that you needed to go. Yeah. And in that practice, deep silence is the response, and the time to be open to just let it work on you and let it chew on you. So that's part of this too, is that space for silence with those questions.
Are those rhetorical questions? Hmm.
Not exactly rhetorical questions. I mean, I think those kind of questions are, you know, so it's like, we'll come up with some questions, but they're the ones that stump you because they're really deep and important about your deep values or your deep, they don't stump you because you don't know. They stump you because you like, don't know. Like, I don't know, right? I just don't. Like, what is this, their core? They get at some deeper levels that maybe you're not even in touch with or open to. Yeah. Yeah. That line there was a sort of a noise in the room, if you noticed, that it's not about questions to satisfy your curiosity, right? And that's usually where we ask questions. It's like, oh, what is that about? Or that reminds me of blah, blah, blah. But really in this self-awakening, you're trying to open the other person up to help them think through. And it's also can't be things you know that there's a yes or no answer to. That's not real help. I mean, you know, sometimes you want clarifying questions, but these are the kind of questions where it may lead to another story or to some kind of level of depth that we weren't even aware of. So what are some questions that you could ask a person?
Eric, move that forward. It's kind of in the dark. Thanks.
All right.
There you go.
What are some questions that people have asked you or that you can think of that might be this kind of question? We'll just generate a little
bit. What image does that bring up?
Yeah.
Are there any images that go along with it?
Uh-huh. Great. You heard that one already earlier. That's the therapist question, too.
No yeah. way. Never ask that question. Never.
Never.
Why not?
Why not?
Why not? Because there's other ways to get at that information.
Ah, okay.
And that puts them on the spot. They get uncomfortable, and they may not return it.
So what would be one way you might ask that question a different way?
Tell me more about that. What happened? Was there another part in time in your life when you felt the same way? What does it remind you of? Can you draw me a picture of it? I do a lot of art stuff. Can you draw me a picture of it? What color is it?
What colors?
Yeah, well, I do EMDR, and if anybody knows what that is, it's another thing. But, yeah, what color is it? If I gave you a box of colors, and I asked you to choose a color for emotion or feeling, what color would it be? And how, you know, what's that like?
I scribble.
Why? Mm-hmm. I try to stay away from why, too. They teach us in therapy school, never ask why. So,
some of these out of the blue ones it's surprising what they can open up. Because it gets you out of your like cognitive brain and into some other heart spaces and gut spaces and creative, like that turns on your creative brain and jars you out of whatever you're stuck in sometimes too, right? Yeah. I always think about this. Remember the dating game show? If you were a breakfast cereal, what breakfast cereal would you be? Do you remember that show? Yeah, that's kind of what you're trying to get at, kind of the deeper stuff that evokes out. You know, more. There's more to these stories. There's layer upon layer. And again, it's not just for your own curiosity. It's what do you think might crack open another layer or a deeper thing, or you get a little hunch here. Yeah. What are some more?
When you ask what color, can you then ask why? Why did you choose blue?
You can, in this practice, you can. In this practice,
yeah,
you can. We're not
this,
doing therapy.
This isn't therapy,
yeah,
so it's more interpersonal.
So you can, you can ask people to explain more, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about what happened previously in your life history that you think may have caused you to go down that path?
Yeah. What happened before this?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are some others?
Are you happy where you are? Hmm. Or is there something that you'd like to change?
Yeah. Are you happy where you are? One of my favorites with this is, how is that working for you?
There you go.
How is that working for you? Is it working? That's not working well at all. Oh, okay. Well, what's that about, right? Other ones?
Why do you think you should do that?
Mm.
Those of us who have that should
be. Or whose voice is saying
that?
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. That's a good
one. Yeah. Or whose voice?
How could you do it differently?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
Couple more?
A question that stuck with me for a while when I was asked it. It requires one sentence of setup, which is just a scenario. You wake up in the morning, and overnight something has occurred so that some kind of miracle just for your life. So the question is, what is it that you notice to know that your life is different and it's beneficial, miraculous?
What was the miracle? Imagine a miracle. What was the miracle? Oh, I like that. Sometimes I'll ask, if you were in charge of the world and wanted this to be different, what would that look like? And that stumps people more often than you think. You're, oh, I'm stuck in this, sick of this. Well, if you could have it any way you want. Well, I don't know. Right? I just don't know. What's the miracle? You win the lottery. You get to do whatever you want. Oh, geez. Yeah. One more?
Yeah. I think everyone's asking, what gets you up in the morning?
Uh-huh. That's a more general one, right, rather than digging deep into the story. But that's a good question. Anne-Marie, do you have any to add?
No, but I think we should practice this because okay. I'm watching the time.
Let's do it. Oh, yeah. I love my paper. Okay, so we're going to add this to the practice. So we're going to find a new partner in just a minute. And again, you'll have your 2 minutes to think. You'll have your 2 minutes to share. But then there's 2 minutes of silence again, okay? And during that time, the person who listened gets to think up a self-awakening question. So you don't have to be thinking while you're listening to the first round. Does that make sense? After you've wholly listened to the story, then you get to ponder a self-awakening question for a minute, and then you get a minute to ask them. Does that make sense? And then we'll switch. So it'll be, person A will do, person A will tell their story, 2 minute silence, 2 minute person A. This first time we'll do silence, and then 2 minutes to ask a question and respond, and then we'll switch. So it'll be silence, listen, silence, questions, and I'll coach you through it. Does that make sense? Okay, so find another partner. Again, it can be the same story or a different one.
I think we might have uneven numbers, but... I think we might have uneven number. Well, let's see where we are. You might need to do the story this time, and I can do this. I can do this. Maybe you and Carrie could be partners. You and Eric, you want to be partners with Eric? Unless I don't think, is there an, who's this gentleman back here? Is there an extra person? Oh,
okay.
Perfect.
Yes.
Yeah, because we only have 20 minutes left in our whole session. So I was like, sorry. Yeah, but we wanted to give him 10 minutes to journal.
Yeah.
And this practice takes 12 minutes. So.
Okay, so figure out who's going first and who's going second. Get your name, okay? Okay, you ready? And then 2 minutes of silence to think. And again, you can use the same story or a different story, see what comes up. 2 minutes in silence to think about a time someone took you or your gift seriously. Ready, go. Sentence, okay? So now the person who listened, we're going to be, the other person, a minute, you just get to rest from talking. So we'll have, the first minute of this will be in silence to think up a self-awakening question. And you only get one. You only get one question. So that's what you got a full minute to ponder it. It can be one of these, or when we teach clearness practice, one of the images is that the spirit sometimes bubbles something up. And it sounds silly, but when you do the practice, it's like something just kind of rises in your spirit that seems to be the thing. And if it keeps rising, that may be the one to ask. And it's kind of especially if it's the weird one, right? Listen to see what story or what question bubbles up. So for a minute, the listener is going to think about what question they're going to ask, and then I'll tell you when it's time to ask the question. You get to ask it. And then the person who told the story has two choices. They can either answer the question or they can sit in silence. And that's fine. Or you can sit in silence for a while, but you only got a minute, so it won't be too long, right? Okay. So a minute right now to sit in silence and ponder what the question is. Ready, go. Any of the people who had told, was there a question that would have been like better than the one that the person asked so you could maybe share with them? Right? Sometimes it's like, you know, you maybe know what the question is even. We're like, well, if you'd only asked me about, like, what does this have to do with your mother? That would have, you would have been here all day, right? Not you, Mom, but like, right? All right, so let's switch partners. We'll do the same thing again. So whoever was the
You're
listener.
You're not switching partners.
No, I mean,
just filling the other story.
Sorry, yeah, flip
no
storytellers.
Switching. No more switching.
So the listener becomes the speaker. We won't have silence now because you were quiet before. So tell your story about a time when someone took you or your gift seriously, and then we'll have another minute for the self-awakening question, and then a minute to share. Ready, go.
All right, that was your minute, so I'm going to call you back together. Eric and I were just laughing about the fact that sometimes when you teach college students, you're just pulling stuff out of them. And one of the lovely things about teaching at Holden is that there's all this wisdom in the room. And so we've not done as much as we had sort of planned to, which is great because we're both good teachers. So we're just going to adjust. The next step of this, of course, would be one more round of kind of just debriefing. So you can do that in your own head or with a buddy, or, you know, if you're just thinking about it. The next thing that's really powerful that we won't have time to do either, but we've left space for you to do in your book, is for you at some point to write down this story that you have been telling kind of in its best version. So notice and then pay attention to how it changed. And how did that story change as you told it over and over again? Or how did the story, as Eric was saying, the first story you tell not work, and why did you jump to a different story, and why? What was better? What felt like a more true expression of yourself? So that's a really nice practice if you're just sitting around somewhere and you want to try to write that down. So we have two more sessions this week, and just to give you a little heads up, tomorrow our session we're going to talk about kind of the stories we tell, but we're also going to talk about kind of our cover story. Mm-hmm. So what is a story that you kind of tell because you think other people expect you to tell it? So we're going to sort of delve a little bit into that and also help you connect kind of to yourself and the things that you believe and how that orients you to the person that you are. And then Thursday, we're going to take a more outward focus. So we're going to actually look at a part of a TED Talk by Chimamanda Adichie called The Danger of a Single Story, and talk about how once we learn to speak our truth and listen to others, then the larger kind of social justice impact that that has. So how does it change when I know you're a person and I'm a person? How does that change how I care for you and how you care for me, kind of more in the world? And we're going to do a practice called the Theater of the Oppressed, which is really a cool practice that we've done, where our bodies make pictures and we move into them and talk about who's in power and who's not and who has a voice. And so that's kind of a little preview of what's coming. So it's not the same. You're not going to be doing the same kind of work every day. We're kind of going different directions. So we hope you'll come back to join us. Go ahead, Eric.
So practices are for practicing, and that's why we do this over and over, and it can get feels a little routine. We did this every week with the freshmen, and we'll start every day with a story sharing round, but our hope is that this thing goes viral. The real impact we found with the students was year after year, we created a community of listening, and it really transformed how we live together and how we listen together and how we serve together. So we've created these little cards. They're invitations for you, and there's like 50 of them, so if you want to take a couple, you can. But the invitation is to practice. It's the whole practice on a card. So if you want to like get somebody, you're sitting on a swing and you sit next to them and hand them the card and say, do you want to try this with me, and set your stopwatch. We'd love for this to go viral at Holden this week and just see what happens. So you can teach them by just doing it, and it's also a way for us to practice. So that's an invitation for you to try that. Yeah.
Can I just ask, what do you think would happen if we did it without the stopwatch? And what has the container of time done that benefits the practice? And what do you think would happen without the container of time?
I think especially for people entering into the practice, it's a liminal amount of time, right? So you know you're not 2 minutes. I can talk for 2 minutes. If I'm an introvert or I'm not comfortable talking that long, or it's uncomfortable to listen, but I can listen for 2 minutes. So I think, Carrie, that's a great question. And in the same way that, you know, my first time I meditated, it was for 1 minute and it was painful. And now I could meditate for 15 blissful minutes, right? Or whatever. I think that learning to do it without the stopwatch has a lot of value too. But I think there is something, and maybe it's more for college freshmen who are, you know, more kind of insecure about those roles. Again, people that have had more wisdom and life experience, this isn't so difficult. But
yeah, I think that it's the listening without talking for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's an opinion that I need to practice and other people need to practice. But the idea of it, like any spiritual practice, is that it just gets into your bones.
Yeah. Yep.
And it just becomes part of how you be in the world, right? And so that's really what it's for. Yeah. So the practice is really for practicing to invoke this, really a culture, right, of listening to one another deeply.
So we're almost out of time, but we want to send you off with one last section of Thurman's sermon that I think is really apropos for taking with you out into the community to kind of set the tone. So here's what he says and then is ultimately written down. Now there is something in everybody that waits and listens for the sound of the genuine in other people. And it is so easy to say that anybody who looks like him or her, anybody who acts as this person, acts or the other simply, there can't be any sound of the genuine there. I must wait and listen for the sound of the genuine in you. I must wait. For if I cannot hear it, then in my scheme of things, you are not even present. And everybody wants to feel that everybody else knows that he, she, or they are there. So that's kind of your blessing, and we hope to see you tomorrow. Thank you for being with us. Enjoy dinner. Thanks a lot.